Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with a wonderful guest who is extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing the topic of 20 for 20 in 2022. Joining me by phone today is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20 and also with D2 Demand Solutions. Welcome, Dom.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, well, and speaking of being back, your very insightful report of 20 for 20. I think this is our fourth time of annual discussions over what your report results have been. And to kind of educate our listeners who are unfamiliar with it, tell us a little bit about the process of how you get to the point of where you can create this report each year.
Yeah, so 20 for 20 is an annual sort of survey that we do with 20 senior leaders in multifamily housing. We pick 10 chief operating officers or the equivalent position, and 10 heads of technology, so the most senior people in operations and technology in the industry. We pick a variety of fee managers, REITs, owner-operators, so that we get a pretty cross-sectional view of what's going on across the industry. And what we do each year is we spend quite a lot of time coming up with a set of questions that we're going to ask them. Through the course of the year, we do a lot of consulting work with different companies, which gives us a pretty strong indication, you know, of what people are working on, what the top priorities are in the industry. And as we've gone through multiple years now of doing this, we're now at a stage where, you know, for example, this year, I had a different group of people from the interviewees that I used to help me come up with the questions that we asked. So we put quite a lot of effort into figuring out questions that we know reflect what's going on in the industry. And then we have this series of individual conversations with 20 different people where we ask them all the same questions. That gives us a ton of information just in terms of responses. And then we go through this process of synthesizing it into, well, what did this really tell us about what's going on in the industry right now? And that's really the process that we go through. So this paper that just came out, each year we do this edition, it sort of gives us this snapshot of what people did in the last year, what people are planning to do in the following year. And of course, the more years we do this, the more it can tell us about how things are evolving in the industry.
Well, in the final segment of this episode, we're going to let our listeners know how they can get a copy of the report. But I found, you know, I always find the report very interesting, what I find kind of interesting is that doing a weekly radio show about the multifamily industry and operations of the multifamily industry, the things I'm hearing on the show from our guests pretty much mirror a lot of the things that you've come up in your report. So it's real, and it's their concerns and their things that people are working on. And one of the things that we've discussed many times on the show, which I think was an important part of your report, were staff shortages. As a matter of fact, at Apartmentalize this year in San Diego, I'm going to be moderating a panel about the Great Resignation in multifamily and with a panel of people there. So it's something that is very, very real. Talk about what the report found out about staff shortages in multifamily.
Yeah, well, I think the headline is that it's a sort of backdrop to everything else that we heard. like it's obvious that people are concerned about not being able to staff positions. You know, you'll get people saying that there are some properties where we simply can't find leasing agents at the moment, so we had to figure out a technology solution to that, for example, in an extreme example there. But, you know, the general feeling that people don't want people to quit. They also don't want to be exposed to the fact that it's hard to recruit positions in properties, which is making people look at, you know, maybe making slightly more radical changes to the way that we staff properties and we staff functions. But overall, you can tell that it's the thing that's on people's mind, and it's present in pretty much all of the decisions that they're making. I mean, if we sort of think about what's different about what we heard this year compared to previous years, people are talking about technology as a way of removing friction, for example, for property teams. So what you heard again and again from operational leaders was, we are not doing any project that add any work at all to our site teams. So that's a hurdle. If you can't pass that as a technology provider, you've got a really uphill struggle to get somebody to buy your stuff. Further than that, people were telling us, like operational leaders particularly, like that we are prioritizing the things that remove the most friction from property teams. So again, those are, it's almost like what people are telling you is that we're almost looking to technology as a way of like mollycoddling staff that we don't want to quit right now. That's the sort of different emphasis that we heard compared to previous years. What we also heard, thinking about this from the sort of corporate perspective, a lot of the operational leaders that we spoke to, particularly at some of the larger platforms, at the time we were doing these interviews, they were in the process of going from voluntary to mandatory a hybrid working model. So people were being told that they have to come back to the office 3 and in some cases 4 days a week. That's interesting. It's very much a property management thing. Like people, the same leaders who 1 year ago were telling us, we did a fantastic job of pivoting to this work from home environment. We kind of didn't miss a beat. This was a terrific accomplishment that we made. 1 year later, the same people were telling us, we've decided that we can't do this in perpetuity. There's too much value in property management, in the in-person interactions. We've decided that culturally we're not a work from home organization. And, that sounded like for many people it was quite a delicate balance, because lots of people didn't want to come back, but they'd obviously decided that it was important enough that they had to do that. And just in this environment where you've got this shift in the balance of power between associates and their employers, you can tell that the this sort of delicate dance that they're doing with associates is something that's really close to top of mind all the time. I mean, one data point I'll sort of finish with for a moment is that we asked people what their number one priority was for 2022, and 8 out of the 20 executives said it's retainment or team development and retainment. We've never seen that before in the survey.
Yeah, that's 40% of the people you surveyed. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Tell me, let's expand. We've got about 2 minutes left. Let's expand a little bit on one of those bullet points that the report, because I find it kind of interesting, is the balance of power between associates and employers. What kind of information and details were you able to glean from that?
Yeah, well, so you get a variety of opinions on that. So, everything from, some, there were some operators who were very strongly of the view that the power has sort of shifted to associates. They want more flexibility. They want more comp. We've had to sign off some big raises for people. You sort of can't resist you're offering them the kind of flexibility that they want. You also get people who see this as far more of a balance. It's like, I'm going to have to pay people more money but the culture of my company or the culture of our company is so important that we still have to we still have to decide what things we we're going to insist on. So it depends very much on the kind of company it is. It also depends very much on the function. And there was some divergence between the between the operators and the technology leaders in terms of how they see the staff staff shortages. You know, technology, there are staff shortages as well. But you, of course, the perennial staff shortages for developers, for example. But you also, it doesn't seem to be the case that technology organizations are being forced to come back to the office, right? It seems that you can keep going in a work-from-home environment, and that seems to be more normal in terms of the way that people are organizing technology now. I mean, one data point that really interested me when we asked people, one of the questions we asked this year was, what is the lasting legacy of the pandemic on your business? And when the COOs, the most common answer that they gave was something like, it exposed these qualities of resilience and flexibility and adaptability in our teams. Like that was the thing that really stood out to them that they'd learned over the last 18 months or so. When you asked the technologists, it was much more like, we figured out work from home, oh, and we did all this remote leasing stuff. So they sort of talked about the learnings of the pandemic in terms of the technology solutions that they delivered to solve for these problems, whereas the operators kind of saw the qualities that the experience had revealed in their people. And that kind of informs the way that people are thinking about staff shortages now, too, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, we need to leave it here because we have to take a break, but we're going to be back right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Control by Net provides communities with video surveillance solutions accessible 24/7 from any web browser or mobile device. Our remote guarding reduces crime in garages and mailrooms. Many top owners and managers already utilize our services and love the single sign-on feature to see all properties. As NAA and NMHC members, Control by Net only serves multifamily. Our cloud and managed video solution is consistently voted easiest to use. We meet any compliance requirements. Visit us at www.controlbynet.com or email us for a free site survey at crproperty@controlbynet.com.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters. We're discussing the topic of 20 for 20 in 2022. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20 and D2 Demand Solutions. I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, Dom, we talked a little bit about the overwhelming number one issue was staffing shortages and resident and retention of your employees. The report also mentions that some staffing models are changing. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's an area that I've been interested in for a while, right? So it's always been this sort of promise over the years that the technology would enable us to change the staffing model of multifamily properties. And historically, it's one of those things that never quite happens. So we have in multifamily this 1-to-100 staffing ratio, like there's typically one staff member to every 100 units. And the presence of some technologies that do some of the work that you traditionally associate with property staff holds this promise of changing that model. But what we really wanted to find out was to what extent people are working on this. Like you can see a couple of the public REITs like UDR and Avalon Bay have been very vocal in talking about how they have changed their staffing model by rolling out a variety of technologies that we can talk about the specific technologies a bit later, but stuff that enables self-show, access control, AI leasing, like that kind of thing. And we just kind of wanted to figure out how people were approaching this and to what extent they're working on it. And so the question we asked people was simply, are you actively working on changing your staffing model? And what we found was 40% of the people said no, and usually no, we're not interested. 30% said they had either changed them or were in the process of changing them. And 30% said they were, like dabbling, trying to sort of figure it out, investigate what options were available to them. So it's definitely the case that lots of people are either working on or considering this problem. But kind of what interested me more was, what are the reasons why a company would not do this, right? Because if there's some benefit that some companies are clearly getting, why would companies not follow suit? If we look at the general themes that came out of the feedback that we got on this, the reasons people gave for not changing their staffing model were things like, fee managers. If I'm a third-party manager, the billback model for fee management makes it very difficult to change my staffing model. If you're thinking about, for example, sharing leasing agents between different communities in the same submarket, that's an easy thing to do if if all of the properties have the same owners, but when they have different owners, how do you split resources between different owners in the same submarket? That's hard, a messy problem to solve. A lot of people simply thought that their people are too central to their business model, right, or to their value proposition, and therefore didn't see this as a thing that they wanted to change. And that's a particularly strong view when you think about, for example, people who do a lot of development, for whom being really good at leasing up properties is a really big consideration. It's so central to their economic model that they don't want to jeopardize anything that might compromise their ability to be good at lease-ups. And then you've got some other things. Simply, my properties are not close enough together. Even if I have many, many properties in Phoenix, for example, like they may just be so far away from each other that the logistics of sharing resources between properties are kind of limited to me. Final one I'll share with you, Paul. A lot of people made this very interesting point that these technologies that are really designed to put hours back into site teams' days. We're not convinced enough yet of how many hours they give us back. Like, so we sort of know that if I rolled out an AI leasing agent, that would save some time because the leasing agents don't have to answer the phones all the time. But how many hours a day that translates into, that's less clear right now. And until we know a lot more about that, we can't really consider doing something as radical as changing our staffing model. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah. And one thing I will add to that, at least from my experience in the years I've been around multifamily, family, is it's, it takes a pandemic or something of that nature to get people to even think about changing. Multifamily is very slow to change the way they've been doing things. Have you found that out? I mean, I know you have a lot of experience in hospitality as well, and multifamily has over the years, when they've changed, they've adopted a lot of the hospitality, ideas and let them kind of prove it first.
Yeah, well, there's one very good parallel with hospitality. The thing I always call the Marriott problem, which is that a long time ago, Marriott began to sell markets at the submarket level, right? So, you'd have Marriott people will revenue manage and distribute hotel rooms centrally on behalf of a big group of hotels that represent different different ownership groups and often different management companies as well. And if you think about the model in multifamily, where if I'm centralizing something like leasing, that means I've got leads coming into a market, and it's a really good idea to figure out ways to manage that demand. So if I don't have units available at one property, they can go to a different one. But if I'm a third party manager, for example, I might then be frequently in a situation where I've got leads coming in, and the different properties where you could convert those leads are owned by different clients of mine. So you've got this natural source of pushback, which is another reason why this model, certainly from a leasing perspective, is complicated for companies, particularly in third party management. This idea of sharing resources between properties, which is something, again, if you read Avalon Bay or UDR's quarterly reports, they tell you this is something that they're doing in various submarkets across the country. But that's a lot harder to do if if you don't have the level of control over your operating environment that a company like UDR or Avalon Bay does.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, because in this section of the report, it talks about prioritization and approach seems to rely heavily on company portfolio type. About a minute and a half left now. Tell us a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, so when we started asking these questions, so we had this sort of idea in mind that, again, if we use the REIT examples that we thought of, if we imagined that, well, if that's working, then ultimately everyone will want to do the same thing. So is there a continuum between where most people are today and this, this sort of future state? And what we found by asking people that question is that continuum doesn't really exist. Like, the way to understand how to approach centralization is to understand like two things that really explain most of the motivation or the approach that people have to this. So you have to understand the extent to which they control their operating environment. So they get to decide what technologies they roll out. They control the staff within the operating environment. That's one thing. And the other thing is how close together their properties are, so their submarket density. And if you think about those two things, that really tells you about what the right approach is for centralization. So, for example, if you have high control over your operation and you have high density in submarkets, that's exactly how most of these public REITs operate. That's the easiest environment in which you can do this, because you have fewer stakeholders and you've got an opportunity to figure out different staffing models, because you could have leasing agents that work across multiple properties and maintenance that work across multiple properties within the same market. Conversely, if you have low density and you have a lot of different financial stakeholders, that's a really bad setup for centralization. It's too hard to try and centralize functions in a model like that. But then you've got these two, that puts the rest of the industry into these two other buckets. One of them is, I have a lot of density, but I don't have a lot of control. And in that, that's really the fee manager problem. which means you've kind of got to figure out a way to do that, that you could sell to one financial partner at a time. But then on the other side of that, you've got the model where I've got complete control over my operations, but I just don't have properties that are close together. Now, numerically, that's probably most of the companies in the multifamily industry. And for them, it's much more about figuring out what bits of process you can make virtual. Like, can I take bookkeeping and put it in shared services? Can I do a variety of automated leasing things and make leasing a lot easier and more frictionless and save time there? So for companies like that, you've got much more of a what I call a virtualization challenge rather than a opportunity rather than a centralization one. But yeah, just understanding those two things, how close my properties are together and how much I control my environment, those are the most important things to figuring out how you go about changing your staffing model.
All right. Well, we are going to break it here. We're going to be back right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. EconServe has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call EconServe today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's EconServe at 713-662-3220.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of 20 for 20 in 2022. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me on the phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20 and D2 Demand Solutions. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rev, the leasing management company. Rev is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Control by Net, providing multifamily video surveillance and remote guarding, solving your security issues. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties, and CTS, Complete Technology Solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Dom, getting back to the 20 for 20 report that just came out last month and for the 2022 report, we've talked about staffing and some of the concerns and how technology plays a role. Let's talk a little bit more about the four ops and technologically priorities for the report discovered.
Yeah, sure. So this year we wanted to expand a little bit what we were talking to people about in terms of technology. So what we did was chunk it into four sections. So we asked people about leasing tech. So leasing tech is everything from CRM to AI leasing to self-show. We asked about data analytics, BI, which is mostly BI and revenue management. We asked about resident fintech, which is an area that's seeing huge innovation right now, so everything to do with payments, deposits, that kind of thing. And then we looked at IoT, so smart building and internet together, because the people are increasingly looking at those two things as a holistic kind of way. So anyway, what we But by having these four sets of conversations, there's a bunch of things that we found out about how people are approaching each of these areas of technology. But one thing we were able to do was to just get them to prioritize them. So we force rank 1 to 4, which of these is the highest priority for you at the moment. And the answers told us some interesting things about the way that people are approaching technology. So leasing tech and data and analytics are very clearly the highest priority things right now in terms of technology. What was interesting to me about IoT and connectivity, given that it's an expensive set of technology to implement, and because it involves putting physical stuff in buildings, it has a sort of interesting risk profile. It interests me that did not attract as high of a priority from this audience. We can talk about reasons for that in a moment. But then also resident fintech, although these are really popular solutions and people saw enormous value in them, they generally seem to be of the view that these are quite easy things to buy and implement. Therefore, although there's tons of activity going on, it doesn't appear to be a technology that keeps people awake at night. Should I talk a little bit about the priority stuff, Paul?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So if we talk about the things that attracted the highest priority, I don't think there's any surprise that leasing tech was the highest priority thing of all. If you think about the last 18 months, we've seen more disruption there than in any other domain in multifamily. And people have just been exposed to more new ways of doing things. So it doesn't surprise me that everybody is sort of thinking about transforming at least some part of their leasing process. The thing that really caught my eye, though, out of these results this year was the rise of AI leasing agents. So if you think about what we're talking about specifically is we're not talking about the bots, like chat bots that people put on websites. Those are primarily like a marketing tool. We're talking about the conversational AI that people are implementing that's really an operational tool because it specifically does things that leasing agents normally do. You know, it answers the phone and goes from initial inquiry through to booking the tour. What fascinates me about that is the number of people that are doing it. Like we report the numbers in the paper, but almost half of the people that we spoke to had either fully implemented or were in a full implementation of AI leasing. Only a quarter of people were doing nothing as far as AI leasing is concerned, and the remainder were either piloting or looking to pilot the technology. Now, a couple of years ago, when we did the 20 for 20 interviews, we made the prediction that this technology is about to go really big. At that time, 2 out of the 20 people that we spoke to had implemented it. But we just noticed that it seems easy enough to implement. It's really obvious what problem it solves. It solves a very perennial problem of people, you know, answering the phone in multifamily. And given that there were really solid customer stories and viable vendors in the market, we just couldn't see any reason why that wouldn't go big. Of course, events supervened, and it didn't really happen in 2020. I suspect largely because the pandemic came along and people had to change too many other things about leasing to deal with that situation. But looking at this year's results, this looks to me very much like a technology whose time has come.
Yeah, and we've got about 3 minutes left in this segment. Let's talk a little bit about the other snapshot.
Yeah, so the other thing in terms of the high priority things was business intelligence. And that what we saw there was generally a heightened level of activity. So all but 15% of the people that we spoke to, so, you know, 17 out of 20 people that we spoke to had either bought a BI solution or had done a major piece of development on a platform that they already own. Most of that is to do, I think, with the fact that during the pandemic, people had to figure out ways to report on a lot of new stuff. You know, you had to report on collections, delinquencies, rent assistance, you know, all this stuff that was suddenly under the microscope that maybe wasn't previously. But also, I remember like a year ago, people talked about how the level of engagement in their BI platforms from business users had shot up. Again, because when you can't walk down the corridor and go ask somebody something, you have a much greater need to have this data delivered to your fingertips. So that explains a lot of this. And it's interesting, when we looked at the priorities overall, this was the only area where there was a big difference between the COOs and the heads of technology. This was very much a business-driven thing. Like, it was a high priority thing for COOs. So again, it's very much business users wanting to know more things about their business that seems to be driving the spike in activity that we saw during the course of the year. We see that as hugely encouraging, right? Because what we know about BI projects is that BI projects usually go wrong when the business doesn't provide adequate leadership of the project. When a business leaves IT holding the baby, that's usually when the when BI projects don't work. So generally, very very strong year for BI. Lots and lots going on, and very much the business that appears to be in the driving seat at these companies.
Yeah, and I was interested. We got about a minute left, but I was interested when you were going back to what we were talking about on the four ops and technology priorities. When you look at the graph and you overlay the tech leaders versus the COOs, to me, to my untrained eye, they look very similar, that their priorities were similar, just some very minor differences. To you, it may be a huge difference, but just looking at that graph, it looks like they were kind of in sync for the most part.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Like the main story is that they were very aligned. The only observation that I'd make that deviates from that is the one about BI, where it just mm-hmm. seems to be a bigger priority for operational leaders. But no, you're right. They're largely in a lockstep, which gives me a pretty strong sense that the answers that we've got are representative of what's going on.
All right. Well, we are going to stop here. We're going to be back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after this break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Control by Net provides communities with video surveillance solutions accessible 24/7 from any web browser or mobile device. Our remote guarding reduces crime in garages and mailrooms. Many top owners and managers already utilize our services and love the single sign-on feature to see all properties. As NAA and NMHC members, Control by Net only serves multifamily. Our cloud and managed video solution is consistently voted easiest to use. We meet any compliance requirements. Visit us at www.controlbynet.com or email us for a free site survey at crproperty@controlbynet.com.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of 20 for 20 in 2022. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20 and D2 Demand Solutions. Dom, we've covered a lot of the basics of your report. There's much more to it than what we've been able to cover so far. But we've talked about staffing solutions. We've talked about technology implementation and where people are on that. But the report also talks a little bit about how companies and if companies measure their ROI from the tech. Tell us a little bit about what the report found out about that.
Yeah, so the thing that we really wanted to figure out was how do companies decide how many dollars to spend on these technologies? And the sort of learning that came out of this was that it really doesn't work in the way that a lot of people think that it does. If you're a vendor, for example, like a technology vendor, you're inclined to think that the way that people make decisions about technology is, here's the amount of additional NOI you get at a property if you roll out this solution. And the reality is that, like, absolutely nobody views it that way who's on the other side of that table. Like, one way I would put it is that vendors tend to think of return on investment as a number. And there are lots of reasons why it's normal to think about it that way if you're trying to sell somebody software. But what I learned from these discussions is that owner operators don't view return on investment as a number, like, at all, really. They view it as a rationale, like a way of thinking about what a particular piece of technology is going to do for your business. Now there's lots of, like, really interesting reasons for that. You know, we're a real estate industry. Lots of the things that you have to understand to know what return on investment is are just inherently very difficult to measure. Like, it's very hard to tell whether you got demand that you wouldn't otherwise have as a result of rolling out, like, leasing tech, for example. But what people told, the things that came up repeatedly during the discussions were that when you ask people to tell you how they make the decisions to invest in these technologies, they tell you about generalities about their business. So, for example, if you say leasing tech, of which there's been a ton of activity in the last year, people will say things like, well, we do the projects that we think will push traffic to the highest converting channel. If we can be convinced that that's what this technology is going to do for us and it's not going to blow up our IT costs, then that's a project that we'll typically do. You'll notice they're not saying how much demand or how much it will change their conversions by or how much money they expect to make out of this. It's much more like, I know that if I there's this behavior that makes my business more profitable, and if I do things that enable me to carry out that behavior more consistently, then good things will come to my business. Same is true of things like, if I'm convinced that this will improve my customer experience without increasing my costs, then I sort of know that NOI will follow that. I can't put a specific number on it, but that's generally how people make decisions like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. And it's interesting that they're thinking that way, but evidently they're not really measuring the results. They just know that if they do these things, it's going to make their business better. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, that is the gist of it. And it's interesting, even in the cases, and it's quite a rare number of cases where a company does do a formal measurement. Like, it's usually either a public read, because they obviously have a much higher level of scrutiny on what they spend their money on than most companies do. But it's either a public read or a company that runs itself like a public read. The way that the measurement works is that we do a pilot for 6 or 8 months. We pick some success metrics. We'll then measure those success metrics, and we'll use that information to decide whether or not we continue with the rollout. Well, what that tells you is that there's no causality in that measurement, right? Long before anyone measured anything, the operator had decided what project they wanted to do and what vendor they wanted to do it with. The role of the measurement is to make sure they don't persevere with a project that hasn't delivered the benefit that they thought it would. But it's not that they embarked on this project because they had done some kind of measurement of what the upside of this project would be. So yes, there's a sort of there's a time and a place for measurement, but it just appears not to be in multifamily housing for most operators.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes left before I want to transition to something else. But what about achieving a better outcome with the same headcount. What is that all about?
Yeah, so this talks to the thing that we talked about way back at the beginning. If I think about technologies that make me more responsive to my customers, like make me more available 24 hours a day, and it doesn't require me to increase the headcount, which is something nobody wants to do, because who would want to be more exposed to staffing shortages than they currently are? That's a good rationale for doing a project. So I might look at something like AI leasing, for example, or access control. These are things that take time. They don't require any additional work from property teams, and they usually save a substantial amount of work. But they're much better from a customer experience perspective. Like, there's lots of people that don't want to talk to an agent and don't want to be accompanied when they're doing a tour of a property. So, you know, it's like better outcome, both from a staffing and from a customer experience perspective. And it doesn't increase my headcount. So that is enough of a win-win for people to proceed with lots of different types of technology.
All right. And then the last thing I want to ask you before we transition is, also in this section of the report, you state that ESG is starting to justify projects. Talk a little bit about that and explain what that means to our listeners.
Yeah. So ESG, environmental, social, and governance, are increasingly important characteristics that companies have to report. So any company that's public is already, you pick up any company report and you'll see a section on ESG. So those are becoming culturally very important for companies that are either public or are dependent on institutional money. So it's primarily being driven by the investor community. But it's interesting. A couple of the companies that are sort of deeper into this sort of are starting to see evidence that it's something that people are looking for when they shop for apartments. So it just seems like your position and the initiatives that you're doing in service of ESG are generally just becoming more and more important for multifamily operators. At the moment, any companies that are, as I said, public or have a lot of institutional finance, ESG is already at least a check in the box of major technology initiatives. And I definitely think that is going to get more and more prevalent in the industry. People will think, I think, more and more about ESG as a deciding factor in which technologies they choose to implement, you know, which technologies benefit the ESG objectives of the company the best. I think that will become a bigger and bigger thing over the next few years.
All right, great. Well, I think we're going to leave that where it is. I do want to let our listeners know that if you go to our website at multifamilyradio.com, click on this episode page, which will be episode 215. There will be a link there where you will be able to get a copy of the report. And also, Dom, tell our listeners, we have about 3 minutes left. Tell our listeners a little bit more about what's going on with 20 for 20, as well as D2. And also, if they want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, thank you. So this year, 20 for 20 moved to its own website. It's always been published by D2 Demand Solutions historically, but just because of the following it's got and because of the work that we're generally doing in the technology sector, we felt that this was a good year to branch out onto a new platform. So you will find this year's copy and all of the information about 20 for 20 at 20for20.com, so 20for20.com. So that's where you can go to find that. You can definitely contact me through the contact forms on that site, or you can find me on Twitter at Dom Beveridge. And 20for20 is in addition to publishing this paper, we do work with a growing number of technology companies in the industry. Like because we do things like this research every year, we're very good at understanding how people are considering and looking for technology. So we're helping technology companies to connect with the market. We also help owner-operators to make decisions about technology. There's various ways we can help with that. But generally, just understanding how these decisions get made and who makes them and what are the big drivers, those are areas where we have like this particular expertise that we help companies with. D2, we've been doing a lot of that work under the auspices of D2. Like D2, for those of you that don't know it, is a primarily a revenue management and technology consulting firm. Like where we do everything relating to revenue management from running systems to selecting systems to, in some cases, even building systems for companies that help them optimize pricing. But because we've been so close to the whole multifamily technology stack for such a long time, we also kind of branched out into technology, which has just become a bigger and bigger part of what we do, and really has ultimately led us to this position where we've floated 20 for 20 by itself.
Yeah, well, I think that's fantastic. And as I said in the first segment, this is the fourth time that we've had you on the show to talk about the annual report. We will continue to do that every year and let our listeners know more about it. I do want to let our listeners know that if you have any questions about technology and as it relates to some of the things we've discussed today, I would highly recommend that you get in contact with Dom to get his opinion and to help guide you. And you might find that he's got a lot of information that would be valuable for you to consider when you do that. So, Dom, thank you so much again for being on the show. Look forward to having you on again soon. I look forward to seeing you. You and I always run into each other at the different conferences. So I look forward to seeing you later this year at some of the conferences.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pity I couldn't make my usual trip to the studio this year. But well, obviously, a family bout of coronavirus put paid to that. So unfortunately, it's by phone this time. But yeah, like you say, we'll catch up around the conference circuit this year, Paul. I look forward to it.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show. And we are going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.